Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Friday, May 3rd. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, Mississippi legislators failed to reach an agreement to expand Medicaid, killing the bill for this year. Then NPR's Tiny Desk has a new series host and producer, Bobby Carter. He got his start in radio at Jackson State. Plus, a new billboard campaign seeks to combat the stigma of HIV. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. A bill to expand Medicaid in Mississippi this legislative session has died. Lawmakers were unable to reach an agreement about how the program would operate. A compromise early this week failed to reach a veto-proof margin needed to pass, because Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves has said he does not support expansion. Republican Representative Missy McGee of Hattiesburg authored the original House bill. She tells our Will Stribling she was hopeful discussions could continue, but it didn't work out that way.
I have not heard anything from the Senate today. I took them a signed conference report with the referendum proposal this morning about 10. And I have not gotten a response to that. And so I have nothing to move forward.
Last night, Dilbert said that his chamber was not hot on that idea. Why do you think that is? Do you think that it's because they know that that y'all's position is more popular with your average Mississippian?
Oh, I couldn't speak to the reasons why they didn't support it. But the first person that pitched me that idea was Chairman Blackwell. I heard it from him before I heard it from my folks over here on the House side. I thought it was a good idea. And so we explored that for a little while, and I was hopeful that we could get that done. But then we hear last night that they couldn't support that. So,
however this ends up, how do you feel about your committee and just this chamber's efforts overall, you know, for this being the first time that an issue of this magnitude has been seriously brought up?
I am extremely proud of what we have accomplished in the House on Medicaid this session. I first want to say that it would never, ever have gotten this far without Speaker Jason White, and I'm grateful for his leadership. You know, we've never even had a hearing on Medicaid expansion before, much less a bill that has passed out of committee and off the floor with almost 100 votes. And we had strong bipartisan support in the House. We passed it early in the session and felt really enthusiastic about our chances, although we knew it would be difficult, but we were very hopeful. I'm grateful to my committee, the Medicaid committee, and the conferees that have worked alongside me. And we can leave here knowing that we gave it everything that we had. I honestly can say that we have tried every angle to get something that would be good for Mississippi through the legislature on Medicaid expansion this session. And I suppose it appears it just was not to be.
And I know that no one knows what's going to happen tomorrow, much less in 2025, but do you imagine that this is a fight that you'll want to take up again next year?
I certainly am committed to providing health care for our low-income, hardworking Mississippians. That nothing changes about that. But we will have to see where our members are on the on the topic and also where the Senate is. And so I guess those will be discussions that we can have over the summer and through the fall. And so right now it's just hard to say, you know, what it will look like in 2025. Do I think Medicaid expansion is the right thing and it makes sense financially even? Yes, absolutely, or we would not have pushed it to begin with. What happens in 2025, it's really hard to say standing here at the end of the 2024 session.
What are your thoughts on just the way that this has developed today? It's been very weird with the minority leader, you know, bringing a plan to Blackwell and then Lieutenant Governor, and the Speaker not really being privy to those conversations, really knowing what's going on.
When you were the person that torpedoes a proposal and then you realize that it turned up to be a big royal screw-up and you're trying to save face and then you come back and make another proposal, I think at that point your credibility comes into play. We were in communication during the entire conference process and really thought that we were on the same page to try to get the best deal we could, you know, even if it was that we were trying not to let perfect stand in the way of good. I was hopeful that we would get a bill that, while it may not have been exactly what we wanted, it's kind of like, you know, kicking a field goal and at least putting some points on the board and then, you know, taking the points you could get and then come back next year and build on that. You know, that was not to be. So it is just disappointing. And yes, I don't understand any of what happened today. And I was not a part of any of those conversations. And so I am the chairman of the committee, and I'm the one that has to sign that conference report. So I don't know what those conversations were between other members and the Senate today. I can't even speak to that.
And going back to your sports metaphor, you know, not having points on the board next year, do you think that's going to make it a lot more difficult to get momentum going again?
I absolutely do. Yes.
House lawmakers have been pushing for a deal to expand Medicaid benefits to low-income workers that earn up to 138% of the federal poverty level. Senate lawmakers didn't want Medicaid expansion to move forward without the federal government first granting the state a waiver for a work requirement. That compromise earlier this week combined those two provisions. House Speaker Jason White says the work requirement was the sticking point.
Our votes went from 100 votes to probably 75 votes.
Yeah,
and enough to pass a 3/5 probably. But it's also about the exact same time we got word that they did not have the necessary votes to pass the conference report we'd all signed. I'm not casting blame on them. I wish they had gotten their votes. I have to act on that information. And so obviously we both recommitted the report. So there was some conversation about another path forward. That other path forward at the time of recommittal was a possible referendum. Now, let me say, both sides at that point, neither had agreed that we were going to push a referendum. We just said that may be an avenue. Let's recommit and see if it's possible. And my folks seemed to be on board with that. And they were. I mean, I did not poll the Democrats at that point, but our Republican caucus was on board with that.
Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman says the Senate had the numbers to pass a Medicaid bill previously, but that bill never made it to a final vote.
You know, the sad thing, I'll never know. We had one that cleared the floor. And what we did, for whatever reason, instead of just taking what we had on the table, which we could have passed with a supermajority, we let that go. I'm disappointed in that. I'll just tell you. We had a chance to help working people, and it got hazy and cloudy by a lot of other things that happened in between. So I'm not pleased with that. And it's job one when we come back next year, bring my senators together, get health care for working people.
Coming up, NPR's Tiny Desk has a new series host and producer, Bobby Carter. He got his start in radio at Jackson State University. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
What's your favorite type of music? The old standards? Country? A specific type of jazz?
Maybe you love classical. In addition to Thinkin' Radio Reading Service, we broadcast MPB Music Radio. Listen live to essential and emerging artists from your HD radio, our app, or from mpbonline.org.
Autocorrect on MPB Think Radio, helping you correct your auto problems. Our host is Coach Charlie Milton, ASC Certified Master Technician.
Let me help save you some money working on your cars. Listen to our podcast, Autocorrect.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. NPR's Tiny Desk has a new series host and producer. His name, Bobby Carter. Carter is a native of St. Louis, and on his way to NPR, he got his start in radio at Jackson State. Maya Miller with the Gulf States Newsroom sat down with Carter to talk about bridging the gap between music and news and get his advice for young people hoping to become journalists.
So, Bobby, I gotta ask, as a fellow Carter, how do you feel about Beyoncé's latest album?
You know, I love it. And I'll be honest, I won't say that I'm the biggest country music consumer. I say that to say, I think when she said that this isn't a country album, it's a Beyoncé album, I think that she was spot on, because there are, you know, a lot, there is a lot of country influence, but as the album begins to move, as it moves on, and once we get towards the second half of the album, it feels more like Beyoncé's version of a country record. So I do love the album.
You got your start in radio at Jackson State. I also attended JSU, but I changed my major like a half a dozen times, took a very long route to public radio. What was it like working at WJSU in college, and when did you know, okay, like, this is something I want to do for my career?
Well, I'm a DJ first, so I learned how to DJ when I was in high school. So once I caught the DJ bug, I knew very early on, like my sophomore, junior year in high school, that I wanted to do something in radio or something with music. I knew that I wanted sound to be a part of my life and my career. So with JSU, that was really just the foundation for me in terms of learning radio. When I was at WJSU, I learned how to work the board. You know, I was learning even how to speak on air. I remember at the time, my boss, Dr. McAdoo, we spent plenty of time learning how to pronounce the call letters. It wasn't WJSU, it was WJSU, you know what I mean? So just stuff like that, just learning all of the ropes of radio and figuring out your voice and just the technical side. Now, obviously, a lot has changed since the summer of 1999 in terms of technology, but it was the foundation for me. It was the start, for sure.
And you're not all music. You've done some producing covering elections, the Iraq War, 9/11. How do you feel about the connection of NPR music as a gateway to getting people to listen to NPR for their news coverage?
That's one of the biggest challenges here at NPR and what I do over here at Tiny Desk. As you may know, Tiny Desk, we pull in the youngest, most diverse audience in this building. And thinking about the demographic of our listening audience, we're trying to figure out how do we bridge that gap. You know, a huge sector of our audience that in terms of when we think about Tiny Desk, they only know Tiny Desk. Some of them don't even know what NPR is. So we're really working hard and trying to put our heads together and throwing spaghetti at the wall to figure out how to pull that younger, diverse audience over to our listenership.
What advice do you have for new journalists starting out?
Be courageous, and really, really, if your instinct says that you're bringing something unique to the table, if your instinct is telling you that you could provide something that no one else is providing, speak up quickly, no matter how young you are, no matter how intimidated you may feel. This is kind of speaking to my younger self. You know, I've been in radio now for 25 years, and, I took the long route. I don't necessarily advise anyone to take this long to get there. And I'm still nowhere near where I want to be, but it took me a while to like find my voice and really use that voice and speak up in these rooms and in these boardrooms. And talking to younger people now, like, I don't see as much of that. A lot of these younger kids, like, they're, you know, even approaching me, like, they aren't afraid to pass me their resume. They aren't afraid to ask me, hey, you know, are there any openings? Are there any internships? So I don't see as much of that today. But to any of those kids who may feel like, you know, socially awkward, may not be as outgoing as possible, fight your way through that and speak up. You know, if you're offering something unique and special, like, make sure someone knows that. So I just say courage. I always say just, like, be courageous, because I was shook up early as a kid, you know, and I didn't know whether or not people value my perspective or my voice. And had I spoken up earlier, maybe I'd be a little further along. But nonetheless, I like to share that with young folks when they're coming up.
Bobby Carter is the new host and producer of NPR's Tiny Desk Concert Series, speaking with Maya Miller of the Gulf States Newsroom. And the Gulf States Newsroom, it's a partnership among public radio stations in Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. Coming up, a new billboard campaign seeks to combat the stigma of HIV. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
I'm guessing that MPB Think Radio is the number one preset on your radio, and you listen all the time. But if you need some unplugged listening suggestions, try a binge of one of our podcasts. Our weekend shows, This American Life and Radio Lab, are great to have downloaded for when you're traveling or at the beach. Don't forget about our local shows, Now You're Talking and Creature Comforts, are terrific experiences anytime. MPB podcasts for your listening pleasure anywhere.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A new campaign seeks to reduce the stigma associated with HIV in Mississippi and 13 other states. Around 12,000 people in Mississippi are living with HIV. Roughly 20% of that group hasn't been diagnosed. Among the people who have tested positive, 54% are getting the viral suppressing drugs needed to treat it. And that's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Doctors say a major cause of these health disparities is the stigma about the disease, or rather the virus, HIV. Tracy Jones is the Southern Bureau Chief for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation in California. They are launching a campaign centered around billboards to try and reduce that stigma in our state.
It is really important to us that people who are living with HIV and AIDS are thriving. It is an illness that we've been battling for 30 plus years, and people are surviving and thriving. We have close to 100,000 people living with HIV and AIDS, or HIV specifically, in Mississippi. And those folks have jobs, they have families, they have children. They are living their lives out and proud for the most part, but the stigma is one of those things that really inhibits them from having the full breadth of life. And that is something that AHF is very concerned about, making sure that people can live and free of stigma and not feel like they can't be complete humans because of an illness.
I understand you are targeting 14 states with a billboard advertising campaign. Tell us about it.
Mm-hmm. This campaign is designed to make sure that people understand that people living with HIV and AIDS are not just the sum of their illness. The billboard campaign is one mechanism to shift that narrative around HIV and to celebrate the diversity individuals that are living with HIV and thriving without letting HIV define them. That's really important to AIDS Healthcare Foundation.
Those billboards are going up in Mississippi. When will they go up, or are they up?
They are being placed up as we speak. Some are currently up, and those billboards also serve as an opportunity to reduce the stigma around HIV.
What do people think when you talk about HIV? What are they thinking? What are you hearing?
Well, I think one of the challenges that still remains is people have hold on to old ideas. They remember some of the stigma around people living with HIV and AIDS and experiencing death at a pretty rapid rate. That is not the case now. People live long and fulfilling lives, but I think people still hold on to some of that feeling that it is a death sentence. It's much like we experienced with the early onset of COVID, but that is not the case. Most people we have wonderful medicines that most people only take one pill a day, and some folks are down to an injection that lets them live their lives and only go back to receive that injection as long as their levels and their kidney function as well every other month. No, the pill's not PrEP. PrEP is designed to help people who are not infected. So it is to ensure that you don't get infected. It's called pre-exposure prophylaxis. So it's pre-treatment, if you will. Once you are a person living with HIV and AIDS, the regimens can be similar, but there are new drugs that are out on the market that enable people to take the shot just as if they were taking a regimen of pills.
In terms of life expectancy, have you noticed any difference?
Oh, my God, yes. We have lots of our patients now that are in the senior chapter of their lives. They are, you know, looking at things like retirement, and they're, you know, looking at things like, you know, how to make sure that they're leaving their resources to their families and their loved ones when they do expire. But we have lots of clients in all of our practices that are in the senior quarter of their life, well past 60.
On these billboards, can you give an example of what one might say? Are they the same or different?
This particular billboard campaign is surviving and thriving. So it really is wanting to shift the narrative and get people to remember that people living with HIV are just that. They're living with HIV.
I know Mississippi is at the bottom for a lot of health-related indicators, and we do have Jackson has high rates of
Absolutely.
HIV among men who have sex with men.
Yes, and for women also. Mississippi's annual rate of new HIV diagnosis surpasses the national rates across the country. So, yes, we like to say, you know, when communities of color specifically, you know, we experience things that the social determinants of health at a much greater rate than other communities. And that is the case when we don't have Medicaid expansion. So one of the challenges, if you're asking me the question, anything else, we really need people to realize that Medicaid expansion is healthcare. It really enables communities that are marginalized to get the healthcare they need to take care of themselves.
Does sex education play a role in this at all? Because that's a touchy subject for schools.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that people, a misnomer is sex education is specifically about sex. But sex education could be, especially for younger Americans, it's that conversation about good touch, bad touch. It's the conversation about when you are at a point where you feel like you need protection, here is what's available to you. It's not to encourage sex, but to empower young people to have all of the information they need when they need to protect themselves. Realizing that communities of color specifically are, it can get dicey around that conversation of sex. But what we know to be true is young people get access to the information. They're on TikTok. They're on other social media platforms. And sometimes that information that they're receiving is so detrimental because it isn't vetted. Nobody is controlling it. So when schools that have the opportunity to give that information correctly don't do so, we really are doing children a disservice and an injustice.
Is that something you advocate for in terms of lobbying?
Absolutely. It's something we strongly encourage. But the unfortunate thing when it comes to sex ed is we are dealing with school boards. So it's not necessarily a political issue. It is political, but not in the traditional sense. We need school boards and leaders of school boards, who tend to be, quite frankly, more conservative, to understand that the importance of empowering young people with all of the information, so should they desire or find themselves in a situation where they need protection, they know where to get it, they know how to use it correctly, and they can be in a situation to protect themselves if needed.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us about this. And it's thrivinghivcare.org. Mississippi is one of 14 states that your organization is targeting to bring more awareness and shatter the stigma of HIV. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Tracy Jones is the Southern Bureau Chief for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation in California. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.